oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 136, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. How are you, Paul?
I'm okay. I'm enjoying a moment of calm before I will descend into the chaos of Saturday's Eurovision Song Contest final.
Oh, that is going to be a dramatic day in the Bestel household.
It certainly will, for both my head and my liver.
I thought you were going to say my head and my heart, but I guess liver makes sense.
Both.
So who's your odds-on favorite?
The bookies' favorite is Ukraine for the solidarity and support vote. However, people are beginning to frighten me by saying that the UK might actually not finish bottom this year.
The world turned upside down.
It is. Though my favorite song I've heard, apart from us, is The Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
And it's in Dutch, so I've no idea what they're singing about, but she sounds very nice.
That helps. When you hear someone singing another language and you don't know what it means, it helps. Although I will say, there are times when that can backfire, and I know when I would play heavy metal on my radio show, I used to have to Google the band if it was in another language because I'd want to make sure they're not white supremacists. Because sometimes yes. When they're singing in another language in heavy metal, you can't be sure.
Yes. So it's going to be one of the highlights of my year.
Fantastic. Well, I cannot wait to see. I'm hoping that there'll be some kind of running commentary on Twitter. I do enjoy the Bestel experience on these things.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. You know my love of European music.
No, I do indeed. I do. And I mean, when I was living in England with Nick, you know, we loved watching Eurovision. It was always a hoot. And I don't know who carries it over here, if such a thing were even on. And I mean, Saturday I'll be editing the podcast anyways. So I will enjoy it vicariously through you.
Yes, you'll be able to gauge when I hit bottles and finish them off. Or being constantly asked, are you crying? So emotional.
Well, speaking of crying, I had a brush with death the other day, and I didn't even realize it. It wasn't until afterwards that I realized what happened. And it was at the hands of my mother. Hmm. Last Sunday was Mother's Day here in Canada.
Yeah.
And so I called my mother to wish her a happy Mother's Day. We were chatting, and my mother's always been very secretive about her birthday. She doesn't like people making a fuss. Mm. And so she prefers that I don't tell people when her birthday is, and she doesn't like parties, things like that. She likes seeing friends, but she doesn't like a fuss. This year, she was saying to me, she said, my friends are really, I'm really trying to convince them that I don't want them to make a fuss because, you know, it's a big year and I just don't want to deal with it. And I said, what do you mean it's a big year? And she said, well, I'm 60 this year. And Paul, I said to her, and this was the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life, and I almost once fell off a waterfall. I said, I thought you were 62.
Oh, you have so much to learn about the world.
Yeah, that was a rookie move, Bestel. It was a rookie move. And she said, I believe she said, and this statement coming from my mother explains a lot about who I am as a person. She said, you motherfucker.
You should have said, but you don't look a day over 59.
No, the damage was done, and she can tell when I'm lying. You're covering your ass, aren't you? I am covering my ass. So I have been instructed to say, literally instructed to say on this show, my mother is 59, not 62. Despite the fact I have never discussed it anywhere on this show, she has requested that I specify she is in fact 59, not 62, and I am alive only by her grace. So
I think that shows a great deal of tolerance there.
I think it's more she can't mow her lawn in prison, but we'll say that it's tolerance. Very particular about her lawn, my mother. And speaking of fear, not lawns, fear, we have a great lineup of listener stories, including a really affecting story that sort of piggybacks on top of some stuff we've already talked about on the show in past, things like hands coming out of walls, and also a really, really interesting story that connects with something that's happened to you recently, which is the presence of completely unexplained cigarette smoke, heavy, heavy cigarette smoke, and the sound of construction happening on my side. I'm going to do what I can to mitigate this, but I've got to keep the window open just to get some airflow in here, and there is a massive construction project happening across the street. I've been woken up the last couple mornings by pile drivers, which is about as fun as it sounds. And so I will do what I can, audience, but if you hear some strange noises, it is not ghosts. Well, it's the ghosts that haunt me, but not the real kind.
It might be your mum building a trap.
That is very possible too. Although I don't know if she would bother with a trap. I figure if I'm going to go out that way, I'll just wake up one night and see her looming over me with a knife in her teeth and a dead look in her eyes.
Yes. I was hoping maybe some kind of Wile E. Coyote construction going on outside. Like a giant piece of cheese on the floor. As you bend over, the 20-ton weight will fall on you.
At this point, even cheese would work. I'm just chasing dopamine these days, Paul. So cheese, sure. She can put a 20-ton weight on the ground, and I'll go, oh, what's this? And then she can drop another one on top of me. All right, but before any of that, before my untimely demise or any great stories, we have to thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, you are the roadrunner to our Wile E. Coyote, in that we will always chase you, and we will never quite catch you, but you help define us.
Beep, beep.
And of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we'd especially like to thank our latest patrons. They are
Doug Merklinger,
Joanne Simeone,
Kaylee May,
Kelly C,
Stephen Mooney,
Stopperola,
Andrea Bailey,
Elsie Brock,
Ursula Esquivel.
Guys, thank you so, so, so much. We can't tell you how much it means to us. Again, everyone who listens to the show helps make us who we are. But patrons allow the show to continue. You guys help us pay the bills. Without you, there is no show. And so, from the bottom of our terrible, terrible hearts, we just wanted to say thank you. And if you want to join the team, listen to the end of the show. You can find out about all the cool shit you get. But we will say, for just $1 a month, you get an ad-free feed. And who doesn't like that? Ads suck. For more information, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And before we head to the break, there's two things. We have a musical guest. I'm very excited to say. Our musical guest on this episode is Rainy Days for Ghosts. And Rainy Days for Ghosts is a moody synth project, which is the work of Jerry Smith. And Jerry is a very talented composer. He does a lot of short films. He actually won an award, I believe, for his work on a short film. I can't remember the name of it, but came out last year. He's got a bunch of short film work coming out. And he also is composing the music for The Dive, which is part of the trilogy of audio adaptations we have coming out this summer. I've seen a little bit of the work he's got going into it. Jerry's very talented. I'm really happy with the work he's done. And the music we're going to be sharing today is from his latest EP. It is called Rescore 2. And that EP is Jerry sort of reimagining musical cues from some of his favorite horror films. He's not taking the original stuff and sort of building off it. He's making entirely new cues inspired by those films. And since Paul and I were talking about the Puppet Master series before going to air, the track we're going to be playing on today's show is Toulon. And that is Jerry's tribute to the Puppet Master films. So again, that's Toulon from Rainy Days for Ghosts from their album Rescore 2. And you can find them at rainydaysforghosts.bandcamp.com or by following the link in the show notes. One last thing. We had an email from Gabe, and Gabe was asking about the time codes for the stories, because some people don't necessarily have time to listen to all the chatter and all the jokes and stuff. They just want to get to the stories, which is totally cool, and I understand. And for a while, I was putting them in the show notes, But my concern was that the ads were throwing out the timing, because I base the time codes off what I see in Adobe Audition before I export it. So I was concerned that, well, you know, the ads are throwing off the time codes, so what's the point? But Gabe said that they really, really appreciated having the time codes. And so I am going to work to make those more accurate. I'll be putting them back in the show notes. And yeah, so if you, again, if you like the show, but you don't necessarily have time for the email, or you don't necessarily have time for the chat, you just want to hear some stories, check the show notes for time code links, and they will take you to as near as I can get. Again, because sometimes the ads throw things off, but they will take you as near as possible to the stories, and then you can just jump around and listen to the parts you want to listen to. So we're always looking for new ways to improve the show, and I appreciate when people give us constructive feedback like that. That's really cool. So thank you, Gabe. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back. As we said before the break, on this episode, we're sharing a quartet of lengthy listener stories, one of which involves the jungles of Guam, which is, I believe, a first for the show, and I'm very excited about that. Before we get there, though, of course, we have email, and I want to give a shout out to the podcast Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devilry. It's a roundtable discussion show covering all varieties of the esoteric, from Bigfoot to aliens, ghosts to tulpas, and everything in between. They interview people in the paranormal community, share listener stories, and shine a light on all their talented friends in this bizarre slice of the weird that we all call home. You can find them on social media and wherever fine podcasts are sold. And I believe the episode they're recording as we record this, they're talking about the film 13 Ghosts, which Paul and I were discussing off air. So that is very cool. Again, that's Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devilry. All right. It's the B segment, Paul. That means email.
Woo.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
All right, so our first email comes from Kate, who also submitted a story. Kate says, I hope this message finds you well. Sure, we'll go with that. My name is Kate, and I'm a longtime listener to your podcast. Brennan, I want to thank you for your consistency and dedication to this podcast for all these years. I started listening early on, and your voice propelled me through my undergraduate degree, through the hellscape year between undergrad and graduate school, and now you've tagged along with me into my second year of a graduate program. Your voice has been, oh Jesus Christ, I normally don't like reading stuff that's quite so complimentary, but we'll go with it. I just kind of copied and pasted. I didn't read all of it. It's very sweet, Kate. I'm bad with compliments. Your voice has been the best studio buddy and one of the most consistent things in my life over the past few roller coaster years. Even when everything was falling apart, it was so nice to know I had the comfort of this podcast to fall into. Paul, hello. I really love your addition to this podcast. It's been interesting to watch you two find your groove, and I think you make a fantastic team. Your endless fountain of paranormal knowledge is fascinating.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. That's what I thought. I needed that, Kate, so thank you.
Yes. An electronic hug, just for you.
There we go.
Back to hugging. Our next email is from Donna. I am a new listener, just discovered the show last week, and can't get enough. I'm planning to send in my own spooky tale down the road, but today's discussion about discovering weird tucked away places and missing time jogged something in my memory that I wanted to share. It is not my story. It comes from the Big Book of Canadian Hauntings, compiled by John Robert Columbo. I won't recount the whole story, but it sounds very similar to Paul's accounts of hikers stumbling into a cottage for shelter and later finding it run down and shabby. The story goes that a woman and her family stopped at a truck stop halfway between Creston and Cranbrook. Oh, said that properly. Between Creston and Cranbrook, BC, in 1978, in the middle of the night, when they were exhausted and hungry. She claims that everything at the truck stop, from the gas pumps to the waitresses' outfits, looked almost 20 years out of date. The gas pumps did not advertise that they provided unleaded fuel, which was unusual. The food was dirt cheap, and the radio played 50s music only. No talk or news bulletins. She says she felt uneasy being there, but the coffee was good. She closes her account by saying that the experience left her and her husband with an eerie feeling, which only got worse when they asked friends more familiar with the area if they knew the truck stop they had found. None of them did. She and her husband drove the highway themselves some months later in the broad daylight, and they did find it. Sort of. Here's how she describes it. The building had long been boarded over. The presence of the gas pumps was marked only by their cement bases. The same was true of the Texaco signpost. The lot was overgrown with bush and with aspen poplars that were 20 or more feet in height. It had been many years since that particular service station had pumped gas or served coffee at a dime a cup. But my husband and I know that that old truck stop had been open for business that lonely March night in 1978, when a weary family had stopped, in need of a cup of coffee and a bit of rest. In her letter to Mr. Columbo, the narrator, Phyllis Griffiths, called this experience her Twilight Zone visit, and it honestly sounds like it, doesn't it? Almost too weird to be true.
So, thank you, Donna. I love stories like that. And I will say, just being a little bit cheeky, having been sort of a patron in roadside diners in rural BC, you know, sometimes it's just possible that it just looks like that. I mean, there's this truck stop I used to go to in Hope that Nick hated going to, but I loved it. It was a Husky truck stop. And no matter what time of day it was, no matter who was working, MASH was always on the television. Exactly. And it had been off the air for 40 years when the first time I went there. It didn't matter. Or 30 years, whatever. Nope, MASH was always on the television. And I actually had, when I went back, I went to go take a friend of mine there when I took her to Revelstoke for the first time, and it was gone, and I was devastated. Where else was I going to get my Peterbilt burger? You know, this is vital stuff. But anyways, I'm fascinated by those stories.
Something strange. There's a few stories that involve garages and time slip type events from around North America. Not so much over here, but I've certainly heard more than several.
Yeah, I think we did a whole episode. I was looking for it while you were telling the story, and I couldn't quite find it. But I think our episode of, Road Tripping the Great Beyond. I can't remember which episode number that was. In the new system, it's season 3, episode 25, published in December 10th, 2019. But yeah, that one has a few stories of places which are there and then gone in the morning or along those lines. I think one of the oldest stories of those I've heard is in the book Borderlands by Mike Dash. He tells a story that he found from Iran, I believe in the 1950s. These people had been on quite a long car trip and they stopped at a tea house in the desert. You know, it's kind of the same thing. It was very good. Everything was very reasonably priced. And then when they got to the next village or wherever their friends were, they said, oh yeah, we stopped at, you know, such and such tea house or roadside cafe. And they said, nope, that's not a place. We don't know where the hell you went, but it's not that. And they were never able to find the place again. Really cool stuff. Thank you very much, Donna. Oh, this is a quick one from Lori. Are you the guys that were on the radio, John Boy and Billy? If not, you sure sound like them, especially Adam. Thanks. Love the pod. I don't know what any of that refers to, Lori, but thank you. I'm happy you like the show. I don't know who Adam is or John Boy or Billy. So no, that's just no. But thank you for listening. I hope this was the show you were listening to.
If the police ask, I don't know who they are either.
And I was with you all Thursday evening.
Yes, at a truck stop that played 50s music.
That is no longer there.
Our next one is from Doug. Hello, Brennan, Paul, everyone at the GSG team. I've been listening for almost a year now and recently became a patron. Love your show and the ramblings between you and Paul almost as much as the stories. I've never had a reason to write in until recently. I, my wife, and 3 kids live in Nebraska and have had some strange goings on as of late. Back in March, my wife and I went on a weekend getaway while my wife's aunt and uncle stayed at our house to watch the kids. Only after a day, the aunt reported noises and voices from the laundry and our youngest daughter's room. I laughed it off, as I've never heard anything of that matter in this house. Fast forward 2 days later, when my wife and I get home. It's about 11 o'clock at night, and the kids are asleep, when we hear 3 loud bangs. Not knocks, but bangs on our front door. Startle. I got up thinking maybe it was the aunt and they had forgotten something, or maybe neighbourhood hoodlums were messing around. But no. I opened the door and nothing. I even looked round the backyard and still nothing. Dumbfounded, I went back inside and tried not to be freaked out. Now in the weeks since, I've heard a couple of different things, but never when I'm alone in the house. Only at night when I'm half awake in my recliner. Whether this is because I'm falling asleep, I'm not sure. But just last week, I swear I heard screaming from my youngest daughter's room. But when I got up, she was fast asleep, just as I left her. I do not know if my wife's aunt brought something over or has stirred something up. So far, wherever it may be, and I get along okay, so I'm not entirely worried. However, I cannot say the same for my wife.
And this is why I'm glad my in-laws are an ocean away, Paul.
Yes. Beware a package from the east.
Yeah, Doug, thanks for sharing that, and thanks for being a patron. I suppose it's possible they brought something over with them. It's always hard to say in situations like this, right? You wonder if someone stirred up something that was there, or, they brought something with them. I mean, if it doesn't seem threatening, that's probably not a bad thing. But if your wife's having a problem with it, it's always worth trying to smudge, or even just a very polite, hey, you, GTFO. We're not experts on this stuff, and it's always hard to say whether or not that kind of thing will actually work, but I figure it's worth a shot.
Or perhaps locking your wife's aunt in the laundry room and seeing what happens.
In the name of science, you understand.
Absolutely.
Wear a lab coat, so it's official. We're just, we're not animals.
Clipboard.
Yeah, oh yeah, clipboard's important.
Hmm.
Also, don't tell them we said that. Doug, keep an eye on it. I think this may just wear itself out. It might be something that got stirred up and may just, again, may kind of slow down eventually. I know that's what happened here. You know, we had the peaker for a while and then it seemed to kind of move on. So sometimes these things just come through almost like weather fronts or things like this. They come and they go. So keep an eye on it, Doug, and let us know. Keep us up to date.
Absolutely. Reports from the front line, please, Doug.
Next from Kelly. You mentioned someone waking up with people standing around the bed in white, and it reminded me of when I was 11. My grandma, who has passed since, told me that all her life she would have dreams that she woke up paralyzed, surrounded by men in white. She didn't tell me much, but I could tell it scared her a lot, and she said talking about it brought the dream on sometimes. She did have a traumatic C-section for my mother that resulted in a hysterectomy, if I remember correctly, and at the time I wondered if it was a trauma response resulting from that. She also had several health concerns as she aged, most of which did not result in surgery, but a lot of hospital stays. I wondered for a while if it was aliens, which I admit is far-fetched when it could have been other things for sure, and if that's why she struggled so much with her health. I think you were bang on with the idea that this was a trauma response to her particularly traumatic surgery. Especially, you know, if you've had consistent health problems, I think it's not uncommon for that to happen. I mean, I don't mind telling you, part of my anxiety is I'm a hypochondriac, less so than I was, but it's still a thing. And the number of times that I've had, strokes or heart attacks in my dreams, I know in Doctor Strange 2, they tell you that dreams are, your alternate lives. I don't think it's alternate Brens kicking off with, various hypertensive illnesses. I think it's more likely just my brain kind of visualizing my fears. And I think in that case, it's probably very likely what it was. What are your thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's some kind of brain comforting process, or maybe some kind of, like you say, traumatic replay that's going on there. It certainly seems to be connected more than anything, because it's not really a common occurrence. And I think whenever you've had traumatic experiences that involve medical procedures or hospital visitations, then sometimes that can stay with you for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we don't recognize how much trauma can stick with us, But we really, really, really appreciate you sharing that, Kelly. Thank you so much.
Our next one is from Brian. Thanks, fellas. Listening to a recent episode wherein a child identifies her invisible... Sorry, I'm laughing ahead of myself. Listening to a recent episode wherein a child identifies her invisible pal as Mr. Skin. At that moment, I successfully passed an entire mouthful of coffee through my nose. Well done, Brian. Mr. Skin, you see, is a porn website, or so I've read. So now, I get to experience the lingering scent of Java-infused everything for the rest of the day. Who needs an O2 bar, eh, what? Keep up the good work, but please, no stories about haunted burritos. My sinuses would not cope well at all.
Thank you, Brian. I may have been aware of this association. Perhaps my friend told me about such websites, you know, a long time ago when I kept rough company. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Rough company. All right, pulled out.
But if you look at the episode cover for the Abominable Mr. Skin, there is a character who has bandages on his face and his hands. He's holding a magnetic board like he's standing in front of a mugshot, like he's about to get his mugshot done. And if you look on the magnetic board, it says the episode title, it says The Abominable Mr. Skin. And then in brackets, I've added not that one. So that was my nod to this infamous site that my friend, my really uncouth friend told me about once. And I tried to flush the memory of something so foul and unpleasant from my mind, you know, being the good Christian lad that I am. But that unfortunate piece of knowledge, it hung around. So did you think they bought any of that, Paul?
I hope so. I actually didn't know.
Oh, you didn't? Wow, that was very convincing. I should have tried that. You really didn't know?
No.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, no, it's a thing. It's a thing. We're not endorsing it. And this is not a site to which I have a membership or anything. Let's be clear about that. I am just aware of its existence.
Yeah. There may be other adult-themed sites out there.
Really? I don't know anything about this stuff, Paul. I am pure of heart and mind, an ascetic, you might say, a monk, a warrior poet, a minstrel of bullshit.
A soothsayer of shit.
Exactly. Certainly not someone with with his OnlyFans account open in another window right now.
What, your OnlyFans account? Jesus.
Yeah. Hairy Feet 1, come find me. No, I'm kidding. It's not a real thing.
Oh, bye bye.
That's right. Chub Daddy 9.
Waxing the big toes tonight.
Ooh. I tell you, man, they reached a point in trying to make money where I was like, well, I wonder. No, no.
Yeah, yeah. I know a couple of my female friends have such accounts.
Good for them. Make that money.
And one of them is a feat.
So that's a thing.
Mm. Apparently. Right.
Again, more power to them. See, Brian, this is what you did to us. This is the conversation you provoked with your filthy, filthy mind. Thanks, man. Our final email is from Flick. And Flick said, I saw this and thought, fuck meeting the hat man whose head this fell off of. And I'll post an image in the show notes. It's a giant cowboy hat. Because why not share a giant cowboy hat? Sure, it's got Tesla on it, but we won't let that ruin the fun. Flick says, just to say, I absolutely love, love, love the pod. You guys are awesome and so, so funny. This week's episode, when Brennan said the only way to eat spam is crying, I spat my tea up the wall and laughed so hard I got hiccups. Take care, both. Much love. And thank you, Flick. And I stand by that the only way to eat spam is crying.
You've never cooked it properly.
It's like salted lard. Every time I eat it, I feel like Randall Fiennes huddled over a tiny campfire, just pretending like I'm enjoying myself and getting piles.
Always reminds me of a kid going to places and being fed with grilled spam on toast.
Oh.
Mm.
Like grilled maybe, because then the fat can kind of drip out of it. Pan fried, man, it's just grease on grease on grease. And this is coming from someone who likes grease. It's the word, I'm told.
Yeah, well, I don't eat fried food. I only grill.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's smart.
I think it's given me an extra 2 years at least to balance up from all the other bad habits I used to have.
Well, you heard it from here first. Paul's going to outlive me by at least 2 years.
Especially now I've started drinking smoothies.
Oh, Jesus. Now he's going to be unstoppable. Paul, Keith Richards, and the Roaches will be waiting for us at the end of time. Well, if grease is the word, then we have to tell you more, tell you more, tell you more. And that means it is time for our stories. You wouldn't like the jungle when it's angry. This is from Chris. I've always had an interest in the paranormal, but I have not really experienced anything myself, other than an odd feeling or apprehension at being in a specific place, which I've paid attention to and removed myself as quickly as possible. Good thinking. My wife and I lived on the island of Guam for 14 years. Living there for that length of time, I tried to immerse myself in the culture as much as possible. I learned about beliefs, local legends, and how to be as respectful of cultural things as possible. That is how I learned of the legend of the Tautamona, the people of before, ancestral spirits of the Chamorro people, the indigenous people of Guam. I was taught by the elder Chamorros on the island that you should always ask permission before entering the jungle so as not to anger the Tautamona. That brings me to the story I have to tell you guys. My house was located on a bluff overlooking the ocean, with jungle on one side and also at the back. There were some very cool rock formations in the jungle behind my house, so I decided to clear back some of the brush to make them easier to see. I proceeded to do this without asking permission of the Tautamona, and that angered them. My son, who was about 4 at the time, his bedroom faced this area that I was going to clear. The night I started clearing it, we had all gone to bed, and sometime in the night I was startled awake by my son screaming in his room. I jumped up and went to him, and he was cowering in the corner, looking at the wall closest to the jungle area. He was wide-eyed and almost frantic. I went to him, held him, and asked him what was wrong. He told me it was trying to pull me through the wall. I asked what was, and he proceeded to describe basically what the ancient Chamorros looked like, and he said that he had watched it come out of the jungle, cross the yard, and then half its body came through the wall and started to pull him towards it. As a guy that had heard the stories, I believed him, and I went outside immediately and asked forgiveness for what I had done without permission and promised never to do again. Needless to say, I never finished clearing that part of the jungle, but we also never had any more problems. My son is in his 20s now and can vividly tell you what happened that night and what the Tautamona looked like, but he can't remember much of the other time he spent on Guam. This second story involves my daughter and her visit to a haunted winery near Kansas City, where we live now. Her and a friend went on the paranormal investigation tour at this winery and did the normal ghost hunting things. She said she and her friend thought they saw movement at the end of the halls and felt a push in one of the rooms, but also admitted to having sampled a bottle or two of wine. The strangest part was when the group split up. One group went to do some investigating in a cemetery that is on the property, while the other group, smaller, stayed in the buildings to do more investigating there. My daughter and her friend were in the smaller group. They sat down in an area where they could look down hallways. They were just sitting there, with not a lot happening, as they talked to one of the guides, when it sounded as if a very heavy rainstorm had started outside. They could hear the wind blowing and the rain hitting the building, so the leader said they should probably head to the front area to meet the ones that had gone to the cemetery, as the rain would be sending them back very quickly. When they made it to the front area of the building, the other group wasn't back, and there was no sign it had been raining. Nothing was wet, and when the group arrived back, they said it hadn't rained at all. One even pointed to the star-filled, cloudless sky. And so, Chris, thank you for sending that in. And there's a few things there that I thought were really interesting. But did you have any initial thoughts, Paul?
Oh, no, it's very interesting. I like the one from, as they used to say on the Art Bell show, from somebody who lives on Guam.
Of course. The Guam story in particular, you know, that's such a great reminder of our place in the natural order. And, you know, this is kooky, but I sometimes think one of the reasons we have some of the problems we do in North America, in all over, I think these problems are, but I think, you know, I can only speak to the problems I've experienced and the people around me have experienced, but I think we just have pushed over and over endlessly into the forest, into the wild to build houses, to build, you know, construction projects without any thought as to what we might be disturbing. And I think consequently we've got problems, but we don't necessarily understand how to deal with them because we don't have a frame of reference for that kind of thing anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a cliched aspect of certain paranormal incidents, isn't it? Is that whenever somebody's doing redevelopment or redecorating or knocking a wall out or putting a new bathroom in or something, all of a sudden, whatever's hiding away in the walls or the floorboards or whatever decides that they're not very keen on the home improvements. And obviously that now extends to landscape gardening.
You know, I've heard stories of people who in places like Ireland or Iceland, I mean, Iceland, you know, there's very famously stories where they detoured roads around certain significant rocks because they you know, did not want to disturb what lay therein. And I know I have seen stories, bizarrely, half of Reddit has been turning up on Instagram lately. And there's always these posts about, you know, what's the one paranormal thing that finally made you think there might be more in the world. And recently, one of them was a guy who said, my friend and his family, they had this property and they had what they were told was a fairy circle in the backyard. And they built on it, despite being told not to. And to say that everything went poorly would, from that point onward, would be a massive understatement. And so, I believe in that shit, obviously. That's why I do the show. And I think it's more than belief. I think it's, you know, these things are simply self-evidently true. And I think when you ignore them, you do so at your peril. And obviously in this story, you know, you guys got off pretty lucky there, but certainly other people have not been so lucky.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you went to Iceland rather than Ireland.
I can't imagine why. Certainly I wasn't trying to hope I could avoid having that conversation entirely, but then I remembered that one example and well, here I am.
That happens a lot in Ireland as well. Things like that.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Art Bell because I've been listening to Art Bell. I've been catching up, of course, the Patreon that you put me onto. And it is fascinating to listen to his show. And folks, if you don't know who Art Bell is, he was sort of the original king of paranormal radio, I would say. Would you agree with that statement?
100%.
Yeah. His show went out to something like 12 million listeners weekly. It was, you know, I want to say something like that, as I recall. It might be 6 million.
I'm saying it was, I think at some points they were saying he was getting between 30 and 35 million listeners a day.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is an indication of how popular the show was. To get it in Revelstoke, you kind of had to get lucky in the evening. You know, if the conditions were right, it would come in on one of the US stations. Fascinating stuff. And recently someone who, Art has passed, but someone in his camp has opened up a Patreon where for $5 American a month, you get, three shows every week?
Yeah.
And they're 3 hours each. So it's a massive amount of content. And I don't even try and keep up with all of it. I just kind of pick and choose what I listen to. But it has been a fascinating insight into what I think is where a lot of the way people react to this topic now, I think a lot of that comes from Art Bell.
Mm.
Because there is so much fucking fear preached on that show. Like, I have a lot of respect for Art. I was on Midnight in the Desert, which was Art's show after Coast to Coast. Unfortunately, I never got to meet Art. I spoke to Heather, who was wonderful. I mean, I know Heather's had her difficulties, but she was very kind to me. But, man, just 90% of that show is him just trying to scare the shit out of people. You know, Y2K or sunspots. There was one episode... Like literally, there's just, the sunspots are causing this global warming. It's the sun. Okay, guy. Okay, Art.
Chemtrails.
Chemtrails. There was a chemtrails guy who called in. And, you know, it reminded me when I was on Coast to Coast in 2016, I think it was, you know, during the breaks, they dump you off the line. You just have to listen to their commercials. And I remember thinking, Jesus Christ, every single one of these commercials is basically, do you want your family to be murdered? No. Then buy this product, you stupid weakling. And I thought, well, I feel like George Norrie has taken the show in kind of a dark direction. But now listening to these shows from the 90s, no, it was the same shit. No wonder so many people think that the end is coming. I mean, Alex Jones is just the heir apparent. He just took it to the next level. He's sort of like the Hulk Hogan to the, I don't know, the circuit wrestlers of the 1970s. He just kind of brought it up and made it racist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite interesting as well, because there are some very far out topics and conversations on there. And yet there are still some people who appear on there now who are still bouncing around. So it's, you know, it's very interesting. But I think, you know, everybody who does a podcast, especially in the paranormal world, owes everything to Art Bell.
1000%. Absolutely. I mean, I owe my, establishing in that, like for the book, I owe it to Art because like I said, Midnight in the Desert was the second live show I did. And I did 4 hours of live radio from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. with Heather. And that was an ordeal. And once I got through it, I thought, well, now I can handle anything.
Even chemtrails.
Even chemtrails.
And Y2K.
I tell you, man, these guys who talk about stuff like, oh, the vaccine's going to make you sterile, chemtrails going to make you sterile. If that was true, I wouldn't have had to go through that fucking vasectomy. Watch smoke curling up from my testicles like they just elected a new pope. But it's been fascinating listening to Art. And the one I was listening to recently was Ed Dames, the remote viewer.
Mm.
And, you know, he said some interesting stuff, but then he started just talking shit. Because I've got the benefit now of 20 years of knowledge after these guys have said all this crap.
Yeah.
And most of what he's saying is just not true. It's not even close to being true. And The best part was when someone called in and the very first caller said, hey, Ed, you were on this show 6 months ago or a year ago, and you predicted this, this, and this, and none of those happened. So what's going on? And listening to him try and juggle and twirl plates and figure out how to make it that he's not a total charlatan was, I mean, it was kind of amazing in a way.
The Art Bielik one was quite funny. You know, the guy who brought the Philadelphia experiment forward.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, people were pointing out that they'd found his birth certificate and it completely contradicted his story. And he went, well, that's not me. That was planted by the US government. And that's all he'd say about it. But his birth certificate clearly says that he wasn't young enough. He wasn't old enough to be in the US Navy in the Second World War.
It's just what they want you to believe, Paul.
Of course it is.
Yeah. It's like my friend, her sister used to date these absolute losers. And there's this one guy she dated. And he would love to talk about being in Nam, except he would have been about 5 during the Tet Offensive. So, you know, unless he was like John Rambo, child warrior, he may have just been telling what you affectionately call porky pies.
Yeah. I'm aware of a good friend of mine, somebody that's involved in their family circle, who is a delusional charlatan, claims to have been in the SAS. However, he's never worked a day in his life.
Well, because he's got to rest up. The training is very difficult.
I think some of them, they just think if they wear combats and army fatigues, then that automatically enrolls them into the armed forces. I'm not really sure.
I've suffered head trauma too. By God, I can be a soldier. No, nope, that's not how that works.
My head trauma's too drinking.
See, this is what I miss. Like, In a way, that kind of bullshittery, I kind of miss it because it was harmless in its way, right? Like, guys like Frank Dukes, you know, the Bloodsport guy, the guy who claimed that the movie Bloodsport was based on his life, you know, that was back when you would just call it bullshitting. You know, he's not lying. He's just bullshitting. And there was something harmless to that. You know, like, I was a spy. No, you absolutely were not. That's fine. And I was talking about this on my most recent episode of Largely the Truth. QAnon and all that shit has just taken the fun out of conspiracy theories. Those people, they're not just like harmless kooks anymore. They're not just bullshitting. They're actually taking up arms based on this nonsense they've made. It's really kind of dispiriting.
Yeah, it's just the next level of it, though. We've had it all the time, though, as long as it's been around. You look at what happened over, you know, in North America with the Satanic Panic in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. We had it here with, you know, very similar things, and none of it was true. You know, people got sent to prison and were charged with, you know, child sex offenses, and none of it was true. None of it was true. You know, ruined people's lives. You know, and that's in the days when you didn't even have the internet to fall down rabbit holes in. It was just, you know, newsletters and bullshit. So, you know, it's something that's probably always been there. I mean, obviously, you know, urban myths and things like that, and it's just the next level. It's just now it's just been weaponized in certain degrees, but it's always been there. It's just not had the capacity to permeate as deeply into society as it had previously, I think.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. I hadn't considered that. I wish benign bullshitting was the version of that made it to the modern day and not the other one.
I miss those characters that if you'd seen a dog with five legs, they'd seen one with 6 that could juggle, because we all knew somebody like that growing up.
RIP to the one-up guy. Thanks again, Chris. All right, before we get to the next story, we're going to take a quick break to pay the bills, and then we'll be right back.
Art Studio Ghosts, from Kate. I attended Murray State University for painting and drawing, and spent many late hours in the respective studios. Here's a small grouping of stories related to that experience. For the next two stories, it's important to understand the layout of this area. This building is configured in an odd way, with a massive central room as an art gallery, and the adjoining rooms lining the space in a square outline. If the gallery is locked, you must enter from the lobby, where there are two elevators and a stairwell. To reach the studios, you then have to walk through various classrooms and around the locked gallery space. All of this is to say, if you're near the lobby, you know who is entering and exiting, and there is no other way in or out without triggering fire or gallery alarms. The building is confusing to navigate, and all hallways have no windows. It feels very weird and claustrophobic in some areas and way too open in others, and time just seems to move differently. I can't truly explain it, it just feels weird. Once my friend Carly and I were working alone on a Sunday afternoon. The building was quiet, there were no interruptions, and after the third hour, we were very much settled into the space. No one had come and gone, as this was the beginning of a three-day weekend. We were in full view of the lobby hall, meaning those who entered would pass by our doorway. As we chatted, we heard a door slam on the other side of the building. The door was not near, meaning it must have been through a locked set of painting studio doors. Of course, we had no sense of self-preservation and decided to investigate. Upon further inspection, we realised not only the painting studio door was locked, but all the offices beyond it were locked and closed too. We went back through the halls, called out for anyone, and not a sound was heard. As we made our way back, we consciously checked and closed up each room. Confused but deciding it must have been a vacuum or wind, we returned back to our drawing space. Within 10 minutes of the door slam, we heard the elevator ding open and close twice. Each time we exited the studio to see who had arrived, but the elevator was always empty. This, whilst obnoxious, could be explained by someone pressing the floor by mistake. But twice? And within 10 minutes? We started to feel a bit nervous at this point, but continued our work. We worked without interruption for another 30 minutes or so, before the elevator dinged open once again. This time it stayed open for a bit, closed, but did not move. This means the button must have been pushed on our floor. We both started to feel uneasy, and agreed it may be time to pack it up. As we began to gather our supplies and attempt to debunk these happenings, we heard a far-off bang in the closed hallway. We reopened the still-locked painting studio to find the back door wide open. This door we had closed on our first walk-through. The only way to get to this door was through the locked painting doors, fully in view from our drawing room. Once again we checked and hollered to see if anyone was near, but were met by more silence. We left quickly after that. And even with arms full of drawing supplies on the 7th floor, we refused to take the elevator and ran down the stairs. Later in the semester, I was working alone once again in this very empty building. It was the start of spring break and no one came in to work, so I knew I could spread out and have the space for myself. I had been working on a drawing for a few hours when I suddenly heard a, "Hey!" from down the hall. I cautiously replied, "Hello," to no response. After a moment, I opted to walk around the halls and studio spaces to see who was around. Nothing and no one. I assumed I misheard and got back to work, as ghosts are not a good excuse for late homework. Not 5 minutes later, I hear my name. A clear, loud, "Kate!" from somewhere in the building. I packed it up and called it a day. Later, when I reached the upper levels of my undergraduate courses, I was allotted a private studio space in a decommissioned dormitory, Woods Hall. Woods Hall was in disrepair, the third floor closed off due to mould, and the basement entirely off limits. Our studios were located on the second floor, with the university office space on the first floor. This building felt bad from day one. It's shaped like an arrow, with two halls meeting at a point, where a third hall of room shoots off. This intersection used to scare the shit out of me for no reason. I refused to look down the hall and always walked with my eyes cast to the ground. My studio was located at one end of the Arrow, near an exit. As I am a painter, I utilise hazardous material and have to store chemicals properly. The chemical storage area was at the peak of this Arrow, right next to this horrible hallway. There was always a feeling of something in that space. If you were there alone, there were footsteps in the halls, occasional conversations, creaking, most of which could be ignored, but some days it just felt especially loud. On one such day, I had had enough. I needed to put away my chemicals and solvents, but the idea of walking down the long hallway, then standing and unlocking that door with my back to the even worse hallway, felt like too much. So I called my partner, now husband Joe, to walk through the building with me. It felt childish, but I just couldn't do it. Thankfully, he's a good dude who didn't tease me. Not a common situation in all these ghost stories that we hear. He made his way to the studio and walked with me to put away my chemicals. As he waited for me to unlock the somewhat tricky door, we heard the usual footsteps and keys jangling of someone coming into the studios. From our location, it was impossible to see down the diagonal hallways. So we waited, assuming someone was coming to get their own chemicals to paint. The footsteps kept coming, but no one rounded the corner. We poked our heads around the said corner to see a very empty hallway, with all the studios closed, locked, and quiet. Ignoring this, we put away my chemicals and locked it back up. On our way out, my partner asked to use the restroom. We went our separate ways as I gathered my belongings. A few moments later, he walked quickly and angrily into my studio. I asked him what was wrong, to which he replied, "That wasn't fucking funny." Confused, I asked him what had happened. He tells me that he had gone into the bathroom stall, and as he was sitting down, someone came through and rattled the stall handle, the door banging back and forth on its hinges. He saw no feet under the door, no hand through the cracks. But the door was being jostled. He finished his business and came back to my studio to fuss at me for spooking him. But it wasn't me, and it couldn't have been anybody else. I had been there for hours, and no one had come through. We left swiftly. I didn't fully return to working in those studios at that point. This creepy old dormitory studio situation was a nightmare for everybody involved. My friends all had their own stories of footsteps and knocking. One trespassed into the basement only for the pipes to start clattering and rolling across the floor. One made their way to the third floor where things rustled in rooms as they passed. It was just bad vibe city up in that bitch. The rooms had huge windows, but it always felt dark. No one seemed super productive, and my mental health tanked to its absolute lowest. It has been since torn down and exists as a campus green space now. I have visited campus now as a loom, and it feels so much better without that looming, poorly taken care of building. I don't know what was lurking in Woods Hall, but I hope it's gone for good.
So thank you for sharing that with us, Kate. I really, really enjoyed that reading that. And, you know, I replied to Kate at the time, and because I think there is something to this idea of geometry. I think some buildings, some places are built in such a way that they're very out of harmony with the way things work. I don't know if you want to call it a feng shui issue or what you want to call it, but I just think some places are completely counter to those things, and that's why shit happens more often than not. You know, like again, sometimes I think it's a land, but the way she described that gallery, it's so chopped up without any flow with lots of weird angles. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if that somehow disrupts the way things are supposed to work and you get these kind of odd experiences as a result.
Paranormal bottleneck.
Yeah, that's it. You know, there's a hotel here, the Grand Pacific. It's actually the same hotel that I go to the gym in the basement. And come say hi. Don't actually come say hi.
Come watch me work out. Yeah.
No one wants that. It's very expensive, but it's close to my house. It's a 5-minute walk, so it kind of balances. But anyways, that hotel was built with feng shui principles in mind. So there is no direct line from the front door to the back door, for example. Apparently that's, I can't remember exactly why that is, but it's some principle of feng shui. So if you walk in the front door, you kind of have to take this circuitous route to go out. And I wonder if there's something to that. And there are these natural currents that move through the world. And if we build things kind of squirrely, I've thought this for a long time about stairs, you know, because there's always stories about things tromping up and down stairs or weird things happening near stairs. And, you know, I've seen cases where they've moved the stairs and that has not fixed it. And I kind of wonder if it's because there is something about the angle at which these things climb, which disrupts something. But I mean, obviously we have no way of knowing.
I mean, stairs are a very strange thing because in most instances, stairs are not carpeted.
Right.
They might lead from a carpeted room to a carpeted hallway or something. But often, especially in this day and age, it's quite normal to see stairs just as wooden stairs or stone stairs. I've often thought that people notice footsteps on stairs or people running up and down stairs more because often it's usually the area of a house that has the most resonance because of the types of products used in it.
Oh, that's interesting. That could be.
Stairs seem to be more haunted than other particular areas of houses, but it is noticeable that a lot of people, it's footsteps on stairs that people tend to spot as a first indication or as a regular thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd never considered that. I think, too, it's significant that the area around Woods Hole feels much better now that the building is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I wonder if just, you know, because I know school can be stressful, and Kate explained, you know, that it's, you know, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if a place is not properly constructed with certain principles in mind, if all that stress just gets trapped.
Yeah.
And the place just has all this cumulative dread hanging over it from all these deadlines and the pressure of school. And I mean, certainly artistic, if it's an art school or if it's an art department, those are people who are even more given to these things. Like as an artist myself of a kind, you know, I'm a fucking basket case. So I you know, I sympathize.
Well, yeah. I mean, the construction of a building, you know, as with anything, you are releasing energy in a variety of ways. And if it can't dissipate properly, then it's going to get trapped.
I know I was telling you that we've got this massive construction/destruction project happening across the road from us. And when we started having that hallway peaker, you know, that I mentioned, Nick suggested that maybe it's possible this thing had come from that project, you know, because it was a cooperative housing that had asbestos in the wall. So it was just cheaper to knock it down and rebuild. And she wondered if maybe there had been things living there, which, you know, is much in the way that vermin flee a destructing building. These things had relocated. And so it makes me wonder where, if there were things in Woods Hole, where did they go? Maybe they're under your bed right now.
Paranormal exchange students.
Yeah, that's much nicer than my thing. I'm sorry, that was mean. Thank you again, Kate. The Bubble from Kim. I am new to your podcast and have been enjoying it a lot. I hesitated writing this because, well, I'm still trying to figure out what it is my son and I experienced. Years ago, my father and his longtime girlfriend parted ways, but they continued to have her kids and his gathered together during holidays. I always dreaded going to her home during any holiday, and I wasn't sure if it was because I just didn't enjoy the company, my father's ex wasn't a very good person, or it was her house. Maybe both. My father's ex lived in a pretty large home, and I just never felt comfortable being there. I always stayed in the dining room, and I avoided the rest of the home as much as possible and kept my visits very short. Anytime I needed to use the restroom, I would use the restroom that was in her garage. I also noticed one of her adult children and her husband doing the same. The reason I avoided her guest bathroom was always because it felt crowded, almost as if the room was filled with people and someone or something was right in my face. I would feel panicky, even scared. I couldn't use the bathroom fast enough. Even washing my hands, I absolutely refused to look in the mirror. I would try and laugh it off that maybe it was just my imagination. Then, on another holiday gathering, my nieces and nephews were sitting in the hallway playing with a toy, and I sat down next to them, and I swear it felt like I was sitting in a bubble. My hearing got muffled. Everything felt like it was moving in slow motion. I didn't understand what was happening. Mind you, that bathroom I avoided was close to the hallway that I was experiencing things in. And as soon as I went back to the dining room, everything felt normal again. Over the years, we've had many gatherings there, and I started to notice other family members would have the same uncomfortable expression upon exiting that bathroom. And I just knew that they too were experiencing uneasiness that they dare not talk about because their mother lived alone in this home and they didn't want to scare her. Or maybe they were feeling the way I was. Maybe they were thinking it was in their imagination. Fast forward to a year ago. My aunt that I rarely ever keep in touch with visited, and she started talking about how she did blessings at people's homes, so I nonchalantly mentioned my experiences at my father's ex's house, and without hesitation she said, "Oh, her home has spirits, and I've seen a family of three in the corner of her living room, and her hall bathroom is filled with them." I told her how I always felt panicky and scared in that bathroom, as well as about my experience in the hallway. She confirmed that she too had experienced it years ago, and that she did mention it to my father's ex, but she didn't have much of a response. Since my son was little, he was able to see and feel spirits. I always ignored it because, quite honestly, it scared me. He would tell his grandparents when they would go to the park that he could see people that they didn't see. Or when his grandparents rented a vacation home, he refused to enter because he said, quote, "someone died in here," only to have it confirmed by the owners that, yes, their grandfather had passed months prior. Now that my son is an adult, we were talking about this home, and I shared with him my experiences over the years there, and he said that when he played with his cousins in the hallway, he too felt like he was in a bubble and it affected his hearing, almost as if someone or something was covering both ears. We no longer go there, and yes, she still lives there alone. I've never talked to her about it, but to this day I still wonder what it was we experienced. What was in the hallway that made you feel like time was moving in slow motion and your hearing got muffled? And thank you, Kim. That is really, really interesting. Like, we talk a lot about physical sensations on the show, you know, but that's probably one of the most dramatic physical manifestations we've seen in a while. I know sometimes you get that sense of air pressure when there's presence, you know, Everything feels like the air just feels much heavier. And it's got to affect the inner ear.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if this is just an extreme version of that.
Yeah, because you have that muffled sensation, like when you're in an airplane or something, or you're at high altitude, and you kind of lose your hearing for a little bit till your ears pop.
Yeah, like that. So yeah, maybe that's what it is. I mean that implies that whatever was there was very, very much there, like very powerful.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't many instances of such things being reported. Obviously, Keel talks about such areas in the mountains that surrounded Point Pleasant, where you had these fear bubbles or fear spheres that he used to call them, where you could literally walk in and out of them and you would feel absolutely terrified. But
really?
You could walk in and out of them.
Well, that reminds me of a story from Butch Witkowski, allegedly a dogman sighting that someone reported, I want to say in Pennsylvania. And if I remember correctly, he was walking his dogs. The dogs started going crazy. And all of a sudden from the bush, this thing that I guess you can only describe as a dogman supposedly walked out of the bush, kind of looked at the dogs, and then kept moving. And supposedly he went back with his friends later to the bush to try and find this thing. But they reached a certain point where they felt like they just couldn't make, they were so scared they couldn't make themselves go any further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's quite a few Bigfoot reports of a similar reaction as well, and people going back and hitting like a wall, an invisible wall where they just couldn't broach it because they just felt a fear. And obviously people suggest that this is some kind of pheromone or something that creates these kind of fear of this fight or flight reaction that people have.
Well, you know, before we went on air, I was telling you that Nick and I had been watching Unexplained 911.
Mm.
And you know my opinion, generally speaking, on ghost shows. This one is about stories from first responders, which someone actually just published a book on that. So I think I missed my window. But if you watch the show, the reenactments, of course, are way, way over-dramatized. But they also have the person who experienced the thing telling their story over top of the reenactment. And that's the part I found genuinely engaging. And one that really caught me was a police officer who reported to the same house in, I want to say, Georgia for a number of times because this guy claimed that something was throwing rocks at his windows and banging on things outside. And the police turned up and they looked a number of times, and of course they found nothing. But while searching the perimeter of the house, the one officer said he felt this sort of sense of lingering sense of fear that he couldn't nail down. And then finally, this guy called the police again because his dogs were gone. They had run off towards this thing, this noise, and they had not come back.
Mm.
And so the officer claims to have gone out and sort of, again, you know, responded to the call, went out and searched, and found in the midst of this woodland what essentially was a Bigfoot, like a Sasquatch footprint. And he claims he took a cast, and apparently, supposedly, the cast is at a university somewhere in Georgia. I checked with Joseph. He's a professor at one of the universities down there. It wasn't his, but supposedly shortly after the cast was taken, that area was subject to massive flooding. So the officer postulates that whatever it was chased out of the region. But apparently while he was taking this cast, again, if his story is to be believed as presented in the show, he was overcome with this intense feeling of dread and of being watched.
Hmm.
And after, basically, he got, once the cast was prepared, he fucked off. He was done. He left everything else behind and just took that with him.
Yeah.
But again, that sense, as you say, that sense of fear of being in danger.
There's tons of Bigfoot reports where people are somewhere and they get this feeling, this creeping nausea wash over them, where they feel, like you say there, that they're being watched or being stalked even, even though often they can't see anything. But that's when your other senses kick in, and, you know, pheromones are a strange thing when they're released.
Yeah. And this might sound like a goofy question, but I mean it seriously. Are there documented accounts in the literature you've read of people being attacked by Bigfoot or Sasquatch? Credible, I should say, credible reports. Things that you find compelling.
Well, probably the most compelling Bigfoot attack account is Ape Canyon from 1924 in Mount St. Helens.
Okay, I'm familiar with Ape Canyon because I remember Sam Sheeran said he went hiking there.
Yeah.
But I don't know the original story.
So Ape Canyon was a group of prospectors who were digging a claim in the area, and they were doing okay, not amazing, but they'd done all right. And they built themselves a makeshift cabin up there.
Right.
And they'd ended up having they'd seen some hairy giants, or hairy mountain devils, as they were known back then. And they'd had an incident where they'd basically seen one and chased it off. And then things had started, they'd been going out and they'd be coming back and they'd find all their provisions had been tipped out of the bags, but not ripped. So it looked like something had picked the bag up rather than a bear had ripped it apart, things.
Okay.
And started seeing, found a couple of giant footprints around there and things. And then it all sort of propelled to an attack overnight, where allegedly a group of Sasquatch tried to get at them, and they basically had to barricade themselves in the cabin for the night whilst these creatures were jumping on the roof and trying to smash the door down and throwing bricks down the chimneys and reaching through the windows and trying to grab axes and things.
Wow. And so how did it end?
By the morning, they kind of went and sort of disappeared back into the woods. And obviously the cabin was all bashed up, and they found all the stones and sticks that had been lobbed at them, and they packed up and buggered off.
I would too.
However, I'm not really sure. I can't remember off the top of my head whether the one of them shot one of the creatures, and it fell off a cliff.
Oh.
However, a lot of people kind of, because they were saying, well, there's no evidence of this at all. And then I think a couple of years ago, Expedition X, Josh Gates' show, went to Ape Canyon because the researcher who's done the most work on this is a gentleman called Mark Marcel,
right.
Who's found all the original, because they reported it in the local newspaper. I think it was the Oregonian at the time, in 1924 when it happened. So it hit the news straight away. And obviously they were calling them mountain devils at the time.
Oh, interesting.
And so it was reported within days of it happening. But when they went up there fairly recently, they found evidence that a cabin had been there. So there is evidence that it is there. And obviously, I mean, the other aspect of this is that they had a claim and they gave it up.
Right.
So something scared them off the mountain.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I've told bits of this story before, but you know, I've lived with people on a mining claim, and that is not something you give up lightly.
Mm. Yeah. So that's probably the most famous incident that has historical and newspaper records to support it.
Fascinating. One last thing, Kim, I was going to say, I think it's interesting that your father's ex, that her house is large and she's the only person in there. I think that probably has a lot to do with why things cluster there, because I know certainly I have had people in my life who are one person living alone in an enormous home. And certainly it has been my experience that things roost in empty space. We've talked about that many, many times. And yes. I posit that that may have something to do with this. So thank you for sharing, Kim. All right. One more ad break. This will be the long one. And then we'll be back to our final story. Don't forget, if you're a patron, you don't have to deal with any of this crap. Head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, from Jennifer. I want to start out first by saying two things. I'm extremely allergic to cigarettes. My throat and lungs close up, and I can barely see. Also, my breathing is literally my livelihood, so I am naturally sensitive to smoke. For the past few years, I have had a night or two when I wake up in the middle of the night smelling cigarettes in my home. We live in a small Cape Cod, on a quiet street, not near enough to any neighbours that I could smell their smokes. Also, I am a classical singer, and because it is one of the last places that does pay, I am a busy musician at temples and churches, especially funerals in my area. I know it sucks, but someone has to, alas. This past fall, when one of my colleagues came down with the Rona, I was subbing at a church with a very heavy funeral load, so I was getting a lot of business. But it was taking a toll on me. I don't usually read obits and ask for the info before the funeral. I am there to serve in the stead of the family and sing the songs and pray the prayers that they are too emotional to do for themselves. But of course, I had been singing a lot of very sad funerals that week, and I really needed a break. So I was actually looking forward to a nice easy Saturday at my usual Jewish temple gig, when I got a text that a funeral had come in on Saturday morning. I demurred, really needing a break from the heaviness of the week, and texted back that I was unavailable. Not 5 minutes later, the rectory office where I was working had an overpowering scent of cigarette smoke. It was weird, but I sort of shrugged it off because I work near a busy street, and sometimes there will be a smoker walking by my closed window. But it was odd. About an hour later, my boyfriend texted me that he'd just found out that his former co-worker had succumbed after a long bout of cancer. He was pretty upset. The boyfriend and this guy worked together for almost 2 years straight, right before we met. They were sent out on jobs together and had a good relationship. He mentioned that the funeral was going to be on Saturday, and I asked if it was at the church I'd been subbing a lot in, and he said yes, probably, they live over there. When my boyfriend got off work later, I asked if he wanted to go to the funeral, and he said he did, but didn't want it to be weird. He had worked with the guy, but didn't know the family, and wasn't sure who to sit with at the funeral. I told him that after he told me it was important to him, that I had decided to sing at the funeral, and he could sit in the loft with me if he felt uncomfortable. So that was the plan. That night, I had a lot of trouble falling asleep. I felt like I couldn't get comfortable in my bedroom, but I tossed and turned for a while and eventually drifted off. At about 1 a.m, I woke up like a shot went off. I wasn't dreaming. I was just sat bolt upright in bed and started coughing. The bedroom felt like it was absolutely full of cigarette smoke. Not just a whiff from outside, I could taste it, like someone was breathing it into my face. No one was in the room. The window wasn't open. Nothing. The smell got less when I left the bedroom and walked down the hall past my daughter's room. So I closed both doors and went downstairs to see if any neighbour was sitting literally on my porch under my bedroom window, which would have been the only explanation for how concentrated the smell of smoke was. I padded downstairs and flipped on the porch light. No one was there. I opened the door, checked my neighbour's porches. Not a soul outside in the dark. I had been sure of what I sensed, and now finding nothing, I was a little freaked out. So not wanting to wake up my guy or our dog, I went to lay on the couch and scroll on my phone for a couple of hours. The house felt heavy, and in between TikTok videos and Twitter, I said a few prayers for the people I had sung for already, and another one for some strength to get through this one on Saturday, which was hitting us a little close. At about 3 a.m, I started to finally feel sleepy and decided I should go upstairs for at least a couple more hours before dawn. I didn't want to wake up my kids, the boyfriend and most of all the dog, for fear of her wanting a 3 a.m. stroll. So I left all the lights out and quietly crept back upstairs. I passed my daughter's room and opened my bedroom door, then stopped in my tracks. In the dark, over my side of the bed, was a huge thin black shape, like a tall thin black humanoid that would have to have crouched under the dormers of my bedroom ceiling if it was standing tall. But it was bent completely over, with a high arch in his back like a cat. It was like it was staring at where my pillow was, and where I should be sleeping, boring its eyes mere inches from where my face should be tucked in next to the dog and the guy. I was so freaked out I turned the flashlight of my phone on and let out a half-whispered, half-choked, "What the?" The next word just clung in my throat. The thing snapped its neck and stared at me, and then vanished. I swear I almost peed in my pyjamas. My boyfriend picked up his head and said, "You okay?" No, was all I could answer. He said, "What are you doing? Come back to bed." Left with the option of this thing now having just seen me in the hallway, and having my back turned to the darkness behind me, or at least jumping back into bed with my puppy and the tough guy, I took the latter. I pulled the covers up tight and just shook until I passed out. His alarm goes off at 6:15 every morning, so I was a mess when he woke up. I went downstairs to make coffee, but goodness, I was dragging trying to get into my Friday morning routine. He jumped in the shower and went upstairs to get dressed. I woke my kids up to get ready for school and started making lunchbox sandwiches. When my guy came downstairs and I had shakingly poured myself and sipped from the first cup, he said, "That was a rough night, huh? How you doing? What were you looking for?" Not really sure what he was asking, I said, "Really not great. It was bizarre. How did you sleep?" He said, "Well, until about 2:50, I woke up and smelt cigarettes, like I had been smoking them, strong. Haven't felt that since right after I met you. Then while I was thinking about it, I heard you start rummaging around in your night table for something. What were you looking for? Your back was to me. So weird, your hair looked black." I forgot to mention, I am a natural blonde and I was not rummaging in my drawer. I told him so. He said, "Yeah, you were. I told you to stop twice. And then when I finally picked my head up to really look and try and grab your sleeve, you went from being right by the bed to being outside the door with a flashlight on." I told him what I had seen. He was a little freaked out. We managed to push through Friday. He went to the wake with two other former co-workers to pay their respects. I made dinner. And I may have had a few extra heavy pours Friday night, so that I slept without any disruption. Saturday morning, we got up and we went to the funeral. My boyfriend told me a little bit about the co-worker as we got ready. If I open up too much about the info of the deceased, it could negatively affect my ability to serve the duty the family needs me to provide. But the boyfriend was upset, and he doesn't usually open up a lot, so I listened. The guy was a short, stocky Italian immigrant in his 80s from Italy. He spoke Italian at home, had a prodigious number of kids and grandkids, none of whom my boyfriend had met. When they hung out at work, they would share coffees and bum cigarettes off each other. After my guy got his new job and met me, he went cold turkey for my health and to set a good example for my kids. Anyway, the funniest story, my boyfriend told me that this guy was always, always screwing up on the job because he was nearsighted. The co-workers teased him about needing his glasses to see his fingers. And my boyfriend said, "You know that motherfucker had his glasses tucked in his pocket in the casket, It's like it must have been something his family teased him about too. My knees sank, the eyes boring into me, the cigarettes. The house felt so heavy still. We drove to the funeral and I sang a bunch of hymns in Italian. I felt dizzy and disconnected from my body and had a sick feeling in my stomach the whole time. I did a fine job and gave him a good send-off, but when I got to the second to last prayer, I really opened up and gave my full opera voice instead of the usual demure chanted tune. Afterward, the last note, the heaviness lifted. It felt like the sun got brighter, the clouds parted, and my normal armour and my confidence in my voice was back for the final hymn. As I was walking out, it all clicked. The co-worker was checking me out. My boyfriend and I met only a few weeks before he switched jobs for a better and steadier salary. The old man was checking to make sure he got a good look at the girl that was taking care of his former bud.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. And I mean, again, really fascinating stuff. I'm not totally sure I agree with your conclusion, but I think if that has helped you sort of file that away, then great. And there's no sense digging at that too much, particularly if it hasn't come back. But I do think it's interesting that cigarette smoke has been a factor for you recently, Paul.
Yes. Yep. Had another incident the other day.
Yep. What happened?
Yeah, we were. I was just walking through the hall and all you could smell was cigarettes again. And it's happened at least 10 times now. Different times of the day, different rooms.
Do you live in a detached or a semi-detached?
Well, we're semi-detached. We're the bottom floor, but there's nobody outside. You're 10 foot from the pavement.
So it couldn't be coming, say, from upstairs or?
No, it's no smoking.
Interesting.
And smoke rises.
Right, yeah. That's a great point, actually, because I the other day I was in my bathroom in the evening and it smelled very strongly of marijuana. And I'm on the ground floor and I was not smoking. And I just assumed it was smoke coming down from upstairs. But you're right, smoke rises. That doesn't make sense.
So, unless it's goblins in your bathroom.
Well, they're having a party. I wish they'd share.
So, yeah. I mean, the thing is, the catalyst for this is it's only started after we discovered the house next door got blown up during the war.
Right, of course. I forgot about that. Interesting. Almost like now that you're aware of it.
Yeah.
You're more likely to perceive it.
Yeah. And probably as well, because I quit smoking 2 years ago. I would never have known. You don't notice. When you're a smoker, you don't notice how bad you smell all the time.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in the house with a smoker and I know exactly what you mean.
Mm. So it's a very strange situation when you've kicked the habit, moved on, and then when you walk past it. I mean, now it just makes me feel a bit ill.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
Funny enough, when Jennifer talked about having a cigarette allergy, I have some, not as serious, but definitely something similar because, again, I'm not a smoker. Everyone in my family smokes. I actually crave cigarettes, even though I've never really been a smoker. I crave cigarettes. Mm. I just don't smoke, aside from a two-week period when I was in Morocco because I needed something to do. And thankfully, I was able to just put them down just as quickly. But I know when my grandmother passed, the whole family kind of converged in our house because we were, you know, we were the ones in Revelstoke. Mm-hmm. And like I said, everyone in the family smokes. And I remember I had to go lay downstairs after a while because the room was just full of cigarette smoke. It was like an army barracks. It was just blue. And I remember just feeling nauseous. And then it happened again a couple of years later, or more than a couple of years later, when I was in Iceland. Speaking of Iceland, I was at the Airwaves Festival in October. I was in a club and someone was smoking. And I was stood next to them for so long, I started to get kind of nauseous and I had to go back to my hotel and lie down. I couldn't enjoy the rest of the show because I just inhaled so much of this fucking smoke that, it'd become a problem. So I feel your pain, Jennifer. There was no ghosts there, just a French heavy metal band and a guy who really liked to smoke.
Yeah, it is a strange thing. But like I say, it's happened in the hallway, happened in both bedrooms, kitchen, front room, and there's nowhere for it to come from.
Yeah. And funny enough, when one of the people I interviewed for Strange, coming back to find retailers everywhere in the fall, hopefully, they had a similar experience. They would have these puffs of smoke turn up And now they were foster parents, and part of me kind of wondered if maybe their couple of foster kids were just like catching smokes, because they had a lot of foster kids. But their thing was they believed it was the spirit of this old sea captain who used to live there who smoked. But I sometimes think, you know, it's just easier to draw those conclusions because it does that thing. It feeds that human need we have for narrative.
Huh.
And because I'm starting to think there's something stranger happening. And I don't even pretend to know what it is, but I don't think it's quite as simple as we perhaps would like.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things you notice even when you're a smoker, because I haven't. I mean, even when I smoked, I didn't smoke indoors ever.
Oh, okay.
Which, obviously, being British is one of those great pieces of fortitude that we have, that we would rather be stood outside in a gale force wind tooting a fag than thinking, actually, why the hell am I out here?
Oh man, my family smoked inside all the time. I grew up marinated in cigarettes. I am part nicotine.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a smoker's house as well. So right. I mean, you know, and then worked in the pub trade for 20 years nearly. So
of course, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and when I, you know, they didn't ban smoking inside till over here till 2005, I think. 2005, 2007, something like that.
Did you guys have the smoking section and non-smoking section up to that point? Where you could pretend like...
I mean, they had like non-smoking areas, but yeah. Like that's going to work in inside.
Yeah, that's it, right? They used to have that in here. And I remember, you know, going to party at this one pub we used to have called Speeders, which was an absolute dump, but it was fun. But all the fun stuff happened in the smoking area.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where all the fun people partied. So you ended up going over there anyways and coming home stinking like an ashtray.
It's a strange thing. I mean, it was quite odd as well how quickly you got used to it over here when they banned it inside.
Sure.
I only once, and that's remarkable, only on one occasion did I literally just sat there talking and just lit up. And I went, oh, shit. Straight away, I was like, ah! You know? But, yeah, it was really odd how quickly... So, and you know, it's one of those things when you go abroad, obviously you've got lovely weather, so it doesn't really matter. But, yeah. I mean, here, Jesus Christ, the weather you put up with just to get a hit. So, I mean, it is a strange thing because it doesn't really bother me at all. But, you know, once you've given up something as addictive as cigarettes, it is strange how the addiction suddenly, I mean, I went out the other week for a friend's leaving do. And I literally was overcome for about 10 minutes with, I thought, oh, I could really murder a cigarette from nowhere. Absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. Well, it's an addictive thing and not by accident. Mm. Like I said, I'm not a smoker. I've never, aside from, again, those 2 weeks in Morocco where I smoked cigarettes pretty much constantly. I'm not a smoker, but I crave it all the time. I'll be stressed. I'm like, man, I could just go for a smoke right now. And I'm like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Where is, you know? And as I said, but then when I was in Morocco, when I finally, because I think it was a stress response, because when I was on the boat leaving Tangier finally to going to Italy, I took a drag and all of a sudden I tasted it.
Mm.
And I thought, the fuck am I doing? And I just threw it all overboard. No, well, I'm done with this shit. But, yeah, it was, you know, awful, but no, it's addictive because, again, I've never been a smoker, but I still find myself thinking, Jesus, I want one.
Yeah.
Like, I actually keep a pack of American Spirits on my fridge, and sometimes I'll go outside and I'll light one and just leave it in the ashtray because sometimes just that act seems to satisfy whatever urge is drawing me to smoke.
Mm.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so, we just, we're probably going to edit that out. We just trailed off into a very long conversation about smoking. Don't do it, kids, is what we'll say. It's a bad
habit. All the bad things I've ever done in my life, that's the worst thing I've ever started.
And he's done some bad stuff, so there you go.
Not really bad stuff. You know, let's quantify that statement, please.
Okay, yeah, not really bad. Fun bad. Caddish, like amusing roguelike bad.
Bounderish behavior.
There we go. Yeah, don't smoke. And thank you, Jennifer. And thank you to everyone who shared their stories. If you've got a story you want to share, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We would love to read it on the show. We'd love to read it. We read everything we get. We can't fit everything in the show, but sometimes if it doesn't end up in the main show, it can end up in Book of the Dead, which is our short form patron show. And we'll talk all about that after the break, which, I guess that's right now. Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123, or text SHOUT, that's SHOUT, to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. Thanks, as always, to everyone who's part of the Ghost Story Guys family: Lou Greensmith, Sarah Kent, Anthony Germain, and Joseph Comeau. Don't forget to check out Luke's podcast, Luke Lore, which you can find on podcast platforms everywhere, and In Search of Ghosts, which is Joseph's YouTube show. I believe the third video will be dropping here soon. And Joseph and I also co-host the bi-weekly live stream Weird Together, which you can find over on the Ghost Story Guys YouTube channel. And, as always, thanks to you, my friend and co-host, Paul Bestel, the paranormal Johnny Carson, host of Mysteries and Monsters. Paul, what's coming up on M&M?
Well, this week I have my old friend Richard Freeman joining me on the hunt for monsters, covering several of my favorite cryptids we've not touched really before, including the dinosaur that's allegedly living somewhere in Africa, Michaelia Mbembe, giant ground sloths from South America, almastes from Russia, and of course, the Mongolian death worm.
I love it.
So yeah, we've got that. And then I've got Barry Fitzgerald from International Ghost Hunters coming up, and the return of Philip Mantle as well.
Very cool. And where can everyone find you online?
You can find us where all podcasts live, out there in the ether, looking for Mysteries and Monsters, and we're across all social media platforms under Mysteries and Monsters as well.
Perfect. I'm at Largely the Truth on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find my podcast, Largely the Truth, with Brennan Storr, everywhere fine podcasts live. On my latest episode, I spoke to the UK-based battle rapper and horror podcast host, Canel. And he talks all about his career in battle rap, which sounds absolutely goddamn terrifying. Again, the idea of having my flaws pointed out in front of a room full of strangers is, that's up there with, you know, I haven't studied for the test and I'm at school naked as far as my nightmares go. So hats off to him for being able to pull that off. You can find that at, again, largelythetruth.com or by searching for Largely the Truth everywhere fine podcasts live. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we love our patrons. You guys are what makes the show go. And if you'd like to count yourself among their ranks, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys, where for as little as $1 a month, you get an ad-free feed. At $5 and up, you get access to all the cool stuff. There's weekly bonus shows like Book of the Dead and Host Adventures. There's Sunken Library, me and Paul. We're recording the me and Paul Q&A next Thursday. And I have a very strong feeling that's going to be a long episode because we have a lot of questions from our patrons on this one. And there's so much more. Physical rewards, digital rewards. You can check it all out at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And of course, if you support the show at the $20 level and above, that makes you a member of Ghost Force. That's right. Patrons at the $20 level and above are members of Ghost Force and get thanked every second episode, more or less. Here, in this segment, using these voices because, by God, when Paul and I commit to a bit, we commit to a bit. This time around, the members of Ghost Force are... Atham Saragon.
Amander Strong.
April Bowers.
Beth Hansen.
Cheryl Baker.
Dylan Sedlicek.
Generic Bob.
Hannah Brown.
Hannah Siemens.
Hilary DeSasseur.
Jade Moores.
Jason R. Slaughter.
Slaughter, slaughter, slaughter. Jeanette Patterson.
Jennifer Mullen.
Joseph Camo.
Just Julie.
Kimberly Hansen.
Mara Noriegger.
Mark Semler.
Mary Rose W.W.
Peter Guns 08.5.
Rebecca Brink.
Rhonda Sheen.
Richard Easby.
And Whitney Bussey. You are the few. You are the spooky. You are Ghost Force.
Ghost Force.
And the wind shall cry your names.
Forever.
Yeah.
For real, guys, thank you so, so much. You guys are nuts. We love you. Thank you for being members of Ghost Force. And I know we had some folks cycle out of Ghost Force for budgetary reasons. We love you too, and we can't wait to have you back. Certainly, again, we understand it's the way of the world right now. So, but we look forward to having you back.
Air hugs.
Air hugs indeed. I can't get in trouble with air hugs.
Not unless you're using those special gloves.
I'm not touching that one.
That's why you've got those gloves.
If you want to get in touch, we're pretty much everywhere, you know, wherever fine podcasts live. You can shoot us an email at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook as Ghost Story Guys. We're on Instagram as The Ghost Story Guys. And we are on Reddit as r/Ghost Story Guys Podcast. If you've got a story you want to share, best way to do it is to send it via email. DMs tend to get lost. In fact, there was a DM I was going to share on the show and I forgot to share it. So I will share that next episode. This is a great example. But again, I read everything you send. I forward a lot of them to Paul so he can read them too. We love hearing from you guys. It just makes it all worth it for us. So we thank you so much for getting in touch. And if you got a story to share, but you don't feel like typing, you can always call the Ghost Line.
There's something strange.
Thanks to Amber Pease for her Ghostline jingle. Again, that number is 1-888-588-6920. You can leave your story or comment as one or a series of voicemails, and we will do our damnedest to play it on the show. Big thanks again to our musical guest, Jerry Smith, also known as Rainy Days for Ghosts. The track we played was Toulon from his latest album, Rescore 2, and that is a tribute to some of the classic horror films that Jerry grew up with, and you can find that at rainydaysforghosts.bandcamp.com. or by following the links in the bio. And don't forget to look for Jerry's work in our upcoming adaptation of Brianna Morgan's short story, The Dive, as part of our audio drama trilogy, Transmissions from the Void. Those will be out in the summer. They were going to be released as one mega show. They're now going to be released as three separate bonus shows. So I'm very, very excited to share those with you. If you want to pick up some merch, ghoststoryguys.com will link you to our TeePublic and Big Cartel stores. Big Cartel mostly now is stickers. I'm not selling any more autographed copies of Strange because Strange is out of print, and the second edition will be out in the fall, and that's when I'll start selling signed copies again. But until then, you can head to our TeePublic store. We have lots of cool designs, including some based on the artwork of Mike Harmon, who is a UK-based artist who also listens to the show. and lots of other cool gear. Again, that's ghoststoryguys.com. Follow the links to our TeePublic and Redbubble stores. But TeePublic has more cool designs. Redbubble is still there, but just we don't have as many things in that store. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pazanta Music. Find more from him at nightharvestrecordings.com or by searching for Pazanta Music wherever you get your tunes. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. Find more from them by searching for Hexagram wherever you get your music. Remember, that's Hexagram with two X's, not three. Also, Hexagram will be providing the music for the second of our audio adaptations. That is Havoc by Mike Thorne. So, again, keep an eye out for that when Transmissions from the Void drops this summer. I guess that's going to do it.
Certainly is. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then...
Into the darkness we go. You know, I love some of the shit on that show, but that guy was such a fucking fearmonger. Oh, man. It's, yeah, we'll talk
about it. It's raining chloride.
You know, there's good out there, but there's also evil. Yeah, we know. No one said otherwise. Evil. Okay. Now, Y2K, they say it's not a problem, but not necessarily.
They're hilarious, those episodes.
Oh,
everything's going to stop. I'm going to wake up in the next century and we're all going to be dead.
Oh, fuck. One second. I just remembered we have a musical guest.
I once fought off six hamsters.
That's a lot of hamsters.
Especially hungry ones.
That's true. I saw this great TikTok about how many kids you could fight off at once, and we're not going to get into it, but it was very, very funny.
Being an older brother, I'd say about seven.
I guess 200 ducks.
Hmm. Ducks, I'm all right with. Geese are puckers.
I wouldn't want to take on one goose, if I'm honest.
Mm.
Those things are vicious.
Never trust a bird that hisses.
There was they had a goose that kind of hung around. And yeah, you didn't want to get too close to that fucking thing, man, because it just... Okay, all right. All right, nightmare dinosaur. I'm leaving. Jesus. I know when I was in Iceland, you know, they had all this cool shit, but I couldn't afford to eat any of it. It was so fucking expensive there. I spent a lot of time just living on that harkfisker, the dried fish they sell in packages.
Yeah.
And Coca-Cola. That was pretty much... This is where I have to admit, I actually went to McDonald's the other night. I was having a big sad, and I went and grabbed a car share, and I was just kind of tooling around. And finally, about 11:30, I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I want McDonald's. And so I went and had a double quarter pounder and a Coke. And I mean, I don't recommend doing that at 11 o'clock at night.
It's usually the only times it seems like a viable choice, to be fair.
Yeah. The only thing Burger King does that I'm not crazy about is they are much saltier. They seem much saltier than McDonald's.
Mmm.
Well, there's and then there's my tongue. There's a layer of skin gone on my tongue. Like there's, you know. All right. Sorry, I just want to make sure
You're on mute.
There we go. It doesn't happen once per show. Is it really a Ghost Story Guys recording?